Well, I'm really wanting one more small box of Raisinets, and then I'm ready.
I thought you were just gonna say raisins, like that's the candy your children have to choose
Granted, it's
from.
not candy. That's a fruit.
There's a giant date in there,
Have
several boxes of raisins,
ever bought?
and an unpeeled carrot.
The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight to discuss the latest episodes of Silicon Valley and Veep are Shane Center.
Yo, I'm getting closer to the microphone this time.
And Brian Hartman.
Hey, that's me.
So the great discussion around this podcast series has been what to call it. I'm in the Silicon VP camp. Brian is going for a more technically inclined crowd with his Veep CCSI for Silicon. We got a lot of helpful suggestions on our Facebook page. And when I say a lot, I mean five from Brad Kastrup, which I feel like is a
I think you mean Brad K.
Engagement.
Brad K. Brad sorry. K.
Excuse me. B. Kastrup really hooked us up with a lot of ideas. And we appreciate any kind of fan engagement here at the Media Community Club podcast. But that being said, I feel like we still have yet to top Silicon VP. VPC, we're just going to really try and get this resolved before the two seasons end, but no promises. We're going to come up with the very best one, and then we'll provide that to you, our listeners. So Brad suggests Piper Chat, which I feel like is really focused on Silicon Valley.
Too, yeah.
Yeah, getting funded, same thing. Well, I mean, they're
actually
all...
getting funded could be both.
Getting funded could be both. Absolutely, absolutely. So that put a pin in that one, Piper Chat.
That's probably better than my suggestion of three good friends.
I'm not too terribly opposed to it. I like
Silicon Valley Veep.
There's a solid joke.
What about the ambulators?
I mean, that's a great name for literally any group anywhere. But
yeah,
as far
just,
as pertinence, as far as relevance,
to get together.
Yeah, we don't. I mean, I can't speak for Brian when he does these podcasts, but I sit. So I feel like if we called this the Ambulators podcast, we would just be lying to our dedicated fans. Brad also suggests Selena Chat on the same path as Piper Chat. I think we're getting closer. The V.
Yeah, that could be mistaken. Yes.
And Myers-Hendricks 2020 as the final bumper sticker title for our podcast series here. So we're going to mull this over, maybe revisit it next week and the week after. And we'll come up with a solution to this very serious, pressing problem. So, the third episode of Silicon Valley's fourth season, entitled Intellectual Property. First, what we've been most excited about, or at least Brian's been most excited about, is Jin Yang and Ehrlich's idea that they steal from a VC company, but here and there, of Shazam for food, in which you take a picture of your food in a restaurant, like a person who thinks people give a shit about what their food looks like in a restaurant. And then Shazam for food. I can't stand
I
that
look
shit.
At my time
can't
hop
fucking
and I did
stand
that
it.
In the past and I'm so ashamed.
I've never done that, but I've only had the capability to do it in the last like year and a half.
Yeah.
And I feel like
I'm gonna,
did...
hey, let me interject here as a defender. I'm gonna interject to defend
Ambulator
this.
Brian.
Ambulator Brian. I appreciate it for like reading reviews on where to go.
Yes.
Because like, there's
I totally agree with that. Yeah.
Yes, I kind of like to see what people are talking about. So that's cool.
I haven't
cool,
been able
but...
to say Yelp seriously since South Park. It's destroyed it.
Yeah, a very long musical number about jizz and people's food for Yelpers. It's a great anthem for the social media age that we currently live in.
Although, how do you feel about people taking pictures of food they make? Like. Here, I made this badass rack o' ribs.
Well, when I was running my blog, I was writing reviews for some of my recipes, and I would take pictures to show people what it turned out as.
That's fair.
I mean, that was instructional. It wasn't pat on the back, I'm awesome.
No. Yeah, it really wasn't.
Yeah, I did the rack o' ribs, like pat on the back, I'm awesome.
How fucking dare you?
They're good ribs.
The point is, enough people... engage in this ridiculous practice to where the VC people are very interested in Shazam for food, which they call seafood, S-E-E, that's the joke, And Monica and Ed Chen over at Reviga proceed to rat-fuck each other over who take the lead on this project with Ehrlich and Jin Yang, because as Ed Chen, lacrosse douche, finds out, this was never the pitch in the first place. The original pitch was for octopus recipes, and there's no work to be done. And Monica's on her last legs at Reviga, and therefore, if she takes on another project that's almost certainly going to fail, she might be out the door. Real world similarity. We're just going to jump right in here. I'm going to defer to you, Brian, because
So
I don't know anything about anything you've written here. So please.
So as you all typically, when we are watching movies and other shows, take a step farther that I don't understand, I tend to do that with Silicon Valley here. So seafood is much bigger than just pictures of food and recipes. The idea of a computer being able to understand what an image is involves machine learning over time and is actually like a huge thing right now, to be able to take in a picture of something and put it into an augmented or virtual reality is like a multi-billion dollar play currently. And so
no one's cracked it yet.
They're working on it. They're getting close. But to be able to take a picture of something and a machine be able to spit out exactly what it is cutting edge at the moment.
I don't understand how a machine could be able to say this meal was made with butter instead of margarine or sunflower oil instead of olive oil. They mentioned that in the show, like you could find a recipe or find ingredients or that kind of thing.
Well, I think it would pop out a recipe. What is this food? Maybe pop out a recipe. Some suggestions for recipes, how to make whatever.
Not necessarily the recipe. Okay, yeah. I overestimated the power of smartphones, being utterly unfamiliar with them. I thought they were magic, obviously.
Organic goat feta.
Yeah. From Jack the Goat in Saginaw, Michigan, who was fed a diet of, I don't know, dates and grass.
And lives on top of a doghouse. Goats are awesome, by the way. We all agree on this?
I mean, I don't really know a goat, and I've never met a goat.
Well, you don't have to meet them to respect them. They just stand.
You've never met a goat?
I mean, unless you count like Holiday World petting zoos when I was 8 or 9.
I mean, I'm not asking you to go to a movie with a goat. Want to play some football, goat?
I mean, for longtime listeners of the Media Community Club podcast, one of our most memorable discussions/arguments has been about whether the goat in The Witch could actually have been as deadly as he was portrayed to be, even though the goat in The Witch is Satan. But I feel like even if it was just a regular goat, it still could be capable of fucking people up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, especially with those horns. That thing is scary.
They eat tin cans. If your skin's harder than a tin can, you are dead wrong.
If an organism's stomach can digest elements, and not just like carbon, oxygen, that kind of thing, but like heavy metals, then it's not fucking around.
Yeah, that's how Slash is going to go. It's a heavy metal joke.
Ah, okay. Had to think about that for a second.
We'll work on that. You want me to explain that one?
I mean, Slash is in Guns N' Roses. I'm trying to connect it to him eating heavy metals. Does he like chug a thermometer every time
Guns
he goes
Roses
out on stage?
Guns N' Roses is heavy metal. Goat's going to eat Guns N' Roses.
I feel like they're like an 80s hair band.
Well,
do goats eat roses and or guns?
Yeah, I guess that was... Well, no, the joke was they're heavy. I don't really – it was the first, like, rock and roll guy I could think of. I'm like, it's not going to go with Fred Durst. That's not heavy metal.
I wouldn't mind Black Phillip impaling him on his – Fred Durst.
Fred Durst is from Limp Bizkit.
Who's the jinx?
I believe you mispronounced
Richard
that.
Richard Durst?
It's Robert
Durst.
Bizkit,
that's right.
Accent on the Z. Okay, so that's Ehrlich and Jin Yang working on seafood. Rat fuck battle over Reviga. I just really like saying rat fuck. You can thank Richard Nixon for that. Over at Hooli, Gavin, after...
Hey, can I jump in on my real world thing one more time?
100%.
The other thing, so image recognition would be huge to Facebook. So if every time you take a picture and post it on Facebook, Facebook can see everything in the background and send you ads related to those things.
Gross.
They would make a ton of money. So Facebook, or face recognition is there. If in the Amazon app, like you used to be able to scan barcodes and it would pull, like if you're at Walmart or whatever, you scan a barcode and it'll pull it up so you can buy it. They actually have it now where you can actually scan the product and it will pull the product without a barcode.
Huh.
Like it can match the packaging, which is kind of neat.
You know,
how does this apply to your Expression 2 users?
My what?
Expression
2
is
my slide phone.
Slide phone.
I didn't put the accent on the X, clearly. The Expression 2.
Oh, good.
It's just Expression, not E-Expression.
What would happen if I scanned my package, Brian?
Fucking died. joke that died.
If you scanned your package, I believe they already have recognition for those things to make sure that doesn't get posted on.
We talked about Snapchat
media
last week. This week, we're talking about Gavin being out at Hooli and Jack being in charge, thanks to all the underage users. Gavin tries to generate some sympathy for himself, and I think the show does too, and I think the show understands that that's a fool's errand. Gavin is deserving of no praise from his employees. He isn't even deserving of a hug from his toady security chief, Hoover.
I took it as Hoover was just didn't know what to do.
Yeah. He seemed uncomfortable with it.
It wasn't that he didn't respect him or didn't like him, but he didn't know what to do.
He didn't want to lose his job.
I mean, Gavin's out the door at this point. His job is safe. I think his discomfort is Gavin's discomfort. Like, he's sensing how needy Gavin is being in that moment. He's like, I don't want any part of this. I was always just doing my job when I was flying back and forth from China all those times.
Oh, I don't think so.
No, he's really into his job, but he's also really respects Gavin as well. But he's
can
more
you
into
separate
his job.
Those things? Can you be into your job and just and just have vague respect?
He's like a bizarro version of Jared. Think about it.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that wholeheartedly. But Jared, as we saw last week, is loyal to whoever the boss is, not necessarily Richard. And I think you're exactly right in that Hoover is the exact same way. Like, Gavin's no longer the boss. He doesn't respect him anymore. Doesn't have to powder his bum on the way out the door. He can just escort him to his car.
Why are you doing this to me? That'd be great.
So, moving along, Big Head continues to fail upward. He's now teaching a course at Stanford. He fell into that after applying to Stanford and being rejected. And then once the admissions people realized that he was on the cover of Wired, they're like, you should teach a class here, even though you're not qualified to attend classes here. And I wish we would have seen him actually trying to teach. I think that would have been like some good office-level awkward humor, but we just get the debrief back in the incubator.
Who's the worst professor you guys ever had? You don't have to name names, but just give an example.
Kirkwood at U of V.
Oh, yeah, Kirkwood. Burton Cook. From the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. He would write his own quote up there and quote himself. He's like, as Kirkwood would say.
God.
Do you remember that?
I only had one class with him, U.S. History, Civil War to the present. He assigned Howard Zinn's book?
Yes.
I don't like Howard Zinn.
Yeah.
Not a fan of Howard Zinn.
Sure. I mean,
I don't think you solve slanted history by making slanted history.
Yeah, I mean, although I think it's a good point, but
I don't think we read the intro enough where he says, this is not a history book and should not be interpreted
as
such.
I don't remember that from Kirkwood at all. Like, I feel like we glossed over that and just read it for what it was. And, like, here's what happened, as opposed to, it would have been good. Here's how you're. Let's be skeptical.
Yeah.
I was listening to a podcast with Neil deGrasse Tyson today where he said how it was something like it's lazy thinking to accept everything you hear, just like it's lazy thinking to reject everything you hear. So you can't just say no. It's like, well, you got to ask questions. Like, why is this like this? And I don't feel like.
And he did that. Kirkwood sucked for a whole bunch of reasons, but one was that he didn't really encourage debate in his class.
Definitely not.
He overwhelmed us with his bullshit accent from America, man.
Shenandoah Valley, Virginia. Brian, who's your worst?
I don't know. I didn't.
I'm sorry. I can't believe we just lost a listener in Dr. Kirkwood. But
exactly. I didn't take any history or philosophy classes, so those are usually the worst. I had mostly the same professors over and over and over again.
Surely you had Dr. Stickles, as this inside baseball talk continues for those who went to U of E.
What did he teach?
He taught calculus.
No, when I took Calc 3, I had a young guy.
Okay. He taught Calc 1 and just like blasted through it. And his class was 5 hours a week at 8 o'clock in the morning. So, I mean, he goes to that all the time. Not me.
I came in with Calc credits. Pat on the back. Thanks.
Well done.
My first semester, I took a higher class. I could have taken like the 107. I'm like, I'm going to challenge myself and take 134. Got my first C minus. Didn't need to do that.
I got my first D in the F. Imagine calculus class. Nice. 5 hours. That'll weigh on a person's GPA.
My worst
professor. Math is hard.
Math is hard.
I had Dion for poli sci. He's really good. He's on the news all the time.
Yeah.
So well spoken. So there you go.
You know who's not well spoken is Dinesh on a date with a woman he has nothing in common with beyond his
hatred
of Guilfoyle.
One of the better scenes in this episode is the silence and the awkwardness until they just start ripping on Dinesh. So it's quality. It's quality.
This is very much the Seinfeld episode where Elaine and George realize they have nothing in common except for laughing at Jerry. Exact same thing, except Elaine and George never hooked up with each other.
This is a great character development for Guilfoyle, though, because he's been pretty invincible. Like, everything bounces off of him, or all of Dinesh's attacks are foiled. But now we have someone coming in and be like, yeah, that guy sucks. Like, he has no respect in this thing that he would probably brag around the house that he has respect in.
Yeah. And Guilfoyle, I think, regains some face by reminding Dinesh that he cannot just break up with a powerful hacker. So I'm sure that will come up again. Probably things will be going well for Richard. Maybe he folds the regular team into his project, and then the hacker comes back and like sabotages a bunch of stuff. So let's put a pin in that for the future.
Yeah.
Can we not put a pin in how awful of a character Dinesh is this season? So he's the CEO, and he's on national television, and he sounds awesome, looks great. And then he comes back from his date, and he says, I did sex on her. Like, how do you go from being well-spoken on national TV to barely being able to put together a sentence?
I mean, I would challenge how well-spoken he was on national TV. Was he that impressive on those shows?
Yeah,
on those
I thought
shows?
He was pretty good, Jeff, but he's confident. He's full of shit. Like, I think we've all been in a spot. Well, I know I definitely have, where I've been to a spot where I feel confident and just say what's in my mind and go with it. I think it sounds great. It probably sounds confident. It probably makes a good soundbite, but then I've thought about it later. That's full of shit. That's embarrassing.
And Dinesh is also coming off of a public humiliation of having to give his company to Hooli. I think the key is in his humiliation. Like, I think he was only CEO for 11 days. He fully understands that everything was his fault. And like Shane said, I think it's just a blow to his confidence that's damaging his vocab more than anything else. And I feel like, you know, Elon Musk, what's another, who's the nerd? Reid Hoffman. He seems like a big nerd that runs LinkedIn. I feel like he would brag to his bros that he did sex on some woman. These guys are nerds at heart.
Yeah, I was trying to make a LinkedIn joke about that, but I couldn't come up with one. Like, maybe, yeah, I did sex on her. She's related to 4 points over from the last girl I did sex on.
Sure.
It's not a very good joke.
Yeah.
Would you put that LinkedIn joke ahead or below or above my slash joke earlier?
I at least kind of understood the slash joke a little bit.
Yeah. We would have had a lot of dead air as I turned it over in my brain trying to make the connections.
Yeah.
But it's because I would never have made like the heavy metal Guns N' Roses connection.
Gotcha.
You picked bad band.
I did. Well, who
fuck if I know. I couldn't name a person in a heavy metal band.
Are you on LinkedIn?
No.
Brian, are you on LinkedIn?
Yes.
Yeah. Just checking. It sucks.
I don't have any idea what my login is. My login is reset password when I get there.
So anybody can take control of Brian Hartman's LinkedIn page, basically. So get on that, fans.
There you go. It's a good hacking challenge.
The last big plot line in this episode is back with Richard, our main protagonist. He discovers through Monica that Peter Gregory, the VC guy from the beginning of the series, I can't remember the actor's name, but he died in the middle of the first season, and they had to write around it here and there. He was a great character and is constantly messed. I feel like Laurie is she's in the ballpark as far as a socially inept, hard charging VC type, but he was a much better character. Anyways, he had Richard's internet idea. I could not even attempt to explain what that idea was, but presumably the listener has been watching the show and has some sense of it. This was the thing that broke up him and Gavin. He just needed the compression formula to be able to make a new internet, as Richard succinctly says. So basically my question is, has the show been in a holding pattern until now? Like everything leading up to this moment, like this is something Peter Gregory always wanted to do when he did the compression. Richard comes along with a compression algorithm. If the show was always moving towards a new internet, has the intervening like 2.5 seasons been just a giant waste of time?
No, I don't think that's where they're heading at all. I think every year they're just trying to find something different, a different step in the cog that is Silicon Valley. Like, different places they can be. I don't think this is where they wanted to go. I mean, I felt like they replaced Peter Gregory with as well as they could.
Yes.
So there's always only going to be so much you could do.
But if this was such a formational moment, instance, scenario in his professional life, to the point where he still has the picture of him and Gavin on his wall, or on maybe even on his desk. I can't remember from the first season exactly. Like he was looking at that picture, and every time he would have looked at that picture, he would also have remembered why the principals in that picture hate each other now. So Richard comes into his office with a compression algorithm. If he had just said, hey, I have a project I've always wanted to take part in, I just needed what you are bringing me, I feel like that would have been the first thing he would have said to him, even as socially weird Peter Gregory was, like counting Sesame Seeds.
If it was that important to the early season plot, they would have recast Peter Gregory. I think this is something they're just coming up with now.
Yeah, and I'm saying it kind of breaks the show a little bit, maybe.
Why?
Because he would have brought, if it was as important to him to where he's got it all solved, he's got it completely solved based on these notebooks.
But he just needs that.
Yeah.
But I don't think they knew
that. And it would have utterly revolutionized I can't name a person associated with the internet.
They hadn't hit the TechCrunch number yet.
Yes. But I feel like he had a good sense of the potential of it, at least.
But they still hadn't hit
it. I don't know. I would need to rewatch that first season, and I'm not going to do that.
I don't know. It was during one of the passing periods today. I was walking through the hallway, and I was thinking about this episode because I wasn't a huge fan. But then I started thinking about the middle out episode, and I was just laughing to myself walking down the hallway.
Yeah, it's universally recognized among professional TV critics, and they're in their verbose ways that it's the greatest dick joke that's ever.
Yeah, it has to be.
And TV critics know what they're talking about, clearly. They're important people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It just feels like a total series reset. I don't know. I mean, it's fine. This is a half an hour comedy. It doesn't have to be tightly plotted. Like, it's not a great sin if it does the Simpsons thing. Simpsons, you know, being my favorite comedy of all time, where it just hits the reset button every episode. But at the same time, it is a show that has like series long, season long arcs and journeys that the characters go on. So this particular journey, I don't know, raises an eyebrow. I don't think it quite fits with what we knew about some of these characters who have been very important to the show, even though they were only like 4 or 5 episodes.
We can talk about one of my nitpicks about comedies and the doctors they cast.
Sure.
So Richard goes and sees the doctor, and the doctor is just like kind of ignoring him, or I don't even know what.
He has very little respect for Richard.
Right, very dismissive. And I feel like it reminded me of 30 Rock, where the doctor was more of a comedian. And in both shows, like everything about the show seems very real for the most part, except for the doctor. Like the doctors are like cast in some sort of fictional universe that the show doesn't exist. And it's very distracting to me, like distractingly bad.
I think with the doctor in Silicon Valley, he sees so many people that are just like Richard. that, and they all come in and complain about the same things, overstressed, I don't know, carpal tunnel syndrome, whatever, that he just...
When's the last time you heard that mentioned?
The typical problems of your Silicon Valley set. And he just tells them the exact same thing every time. He treats them as opportunities to potentially sell his own app and just tries to get them out of his office as soon as possible because there's nothing he can tell them beyond, I don't know, maybe don't stress out so much about your $1 million, tens of million dollar deals. That's terrible advice to someone in that position. He's just got nothing to give to these people.
I don't know. I just thought it was distractingly bad. I've never had a doctor act like a complete idiot.
And I mean, with like the 30 Rock example, his name is Dr. Spaceman. Like he was introduced as Tracy Jordan's doctor, who was prescribing him experimental psychotropics. So, I mean, on that level, I mean, I'm sure Jack right. Donaghy, well, I mean, eventually he was seeing Jack Donaghy.
Right, exactly.
And IMG executive. So, I don't know. I mean, I feel like they just knew they had gold with Dr. Leo Spaceman and they were going to try and include him in as many things as possible. So we are talking about one real-world similarity. The only one that I could think of, Jared talks about seeing Gavin throw a raccoon, or maybe not a raccoon, like a sloth. I think it was a sloth. Yes. I didn't come up with this on my own. I didn't recognize it in the show, but this is apparently a real thing in Silicon Valley. Like the founder of Digg, whose house was surrounded with surveillance cameras, his dog was being attacked by a raccoon, and the founder ran outside, and all this is captured on security cameras. And he grabs the raccoon off of his dog and chest passes it down a flight of stairs. Pretty good video. We'll put a link to it on our webpage, MunichMovie.club, with the posting for this podcast. And like just that throwaway line, that's what they were referencing.
So I know the other day you said invalid, and we talked about invalid versus invalid.
Sure.
It's raccoon. I'm deadly serious about that. It is raccoon.
I think I've heard that. Yeah. I think I've heard that. I think it's a Dakota inflection.
You're down with me on that. It's raccoon, not raccoon.
Rocky raccoon. Rocky raccoon. I don't know.
Raccoon sounds better. It just flows better.
Any other real world similarities in this episode? Probably not.
I had a child 3 weeks ago, so I don't remember what I watched 4 days ago.
Fair enough. Do you remember a favorite moment, perhaps, in this episode?
Raccoon. I mean, okay. other than Brian has it already, but I thought that we'd all have that.
Jared screaming. It was in the trailers. I've seen it dozens of times. It played before every Young Pope episode. It played before every Big Little Lies episode. I watch Girls also, and Crashing. Every HBO show, they play a promo, if not for Silicon Valley, then for Veep. Seen it dozens of times. It was still very funny in the episode.
It's great. He nails it.
He's got to cut loose.
Are you going to reenact it for us?
No, I am not.
No, I have children sleeping. Sleeping for the love of God. Thank God.
Brian, your favorite moment?
I'll take that one. I don't think I wasn't a huge fan of this episode.
Okay. We will revisit that in our Who Won the Week segment. But first, we're going to talk about this week's episode of Veep. Entitled Justice. The episode is named for a dead Supreme Court justice. And at the funeral, Mike impulsively says to the press, even though he is not Selena's press secretary anymore, this is just like him exercising some muscle memory to impulsively deny stuff. Selena is not being considered as a replacement. And then the episode is spent pursuing this possibility. They get rumors in the news that potentially President Laura Montez is going to come across the aisle, presumably she being a Republican and Selena being a Democrat. So this is just adding fuel to the fire for Selena, thinking maybe she's going to be on the Supreme Court. I don't need a library anymore. I certainly don't need to write a book. And then in classic Veep fashion, the rug is pulled out from under her at the last minute, and we discover that President Hughes, Selena's predecessor, is actually the one being nominated.
The only part of that I cared about for the whole episode was when the press asked Selena about it, and she talks about, they ask her about the passing of the Supreme Court justice, and she says that he was a friend to all people, including corporations, who he thought were people. I thought that was a great dig.
An exceptional line. I've been rewatching Veep over a very long time frame, like several months. And in the first couple seasons, it's difficult to tell what party anyone is in. It gradually, much like Parks and Rec, it gradually becomes increasingly apparent that she is she's a Democrat. And that's one of the lines that is a good indicator of that. Even though Selena is, you know, just as likely to take donations from anyone and everyone as enabled by laws that consider corporations to be people. On a more personal level, Selena has a small heart attack that she doesn't even realize until it's over. But this triggers a large heart attack in Gary and earns him a tiny amount of sympathy from Selena, but it ends very quickly as he recovers and she's back to treating him like garbage. We learn a little bit more about Gary. His life has taken a turn. We have previously seen him in like a normal-sized house for a single adult, but now he is living in a studio apartment with three roommates named Tashelle, Lark, and Boosh. So Gary's life has taken as much, if not more, of a downturn than Selena. We also meet Sherman Tans for the first time in this episode.
Can I say, as soon as he came on screen, I thought, are Jewish people offended by this? Because this is like
stereotypical, I guess. I have no idea what to say about it. I have no idea. It very much seems to play into the grossest anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
But,
like,
but it's Jewish people playing these parts, so. I mean, you're going to be offended on their behalf?
No, I think there's also
some Trump jabs in here. Like, he's a corrupt and callous monster with a horrible comb over. Like, that connection is unmissable. But as far as, like, the heavy accent, I feel like he's not saying oi and schlep and shtick and all these other Yiddish English terms. He's just a despicable CEO, private prison magnate who happens to be Jewish. Instead of a Jewish monster who happens to be a prison magnate, if that makes sense.
The private prison thing was another dig at the Republican Party because they were Obama on his way out was trying to phase private prisons out, and the Republicans said, no, thank you. We're going to hang on to those.
I regret not immediately buying private prison stock.
That was one of my primary memories from November 9th is getting out of bed, taking a handful of aspirin and a big glass of water, and then checking to see what the stock markets are up to. And Google Finance, you know, they have their biggest movers of the day, and seeing CCA and the Geo Group, both of which are private prison companies, all of a sudden rocketing up a quarter each or 40% each. It was gross. It was a perfect representation of what the country was in for. Tans is not even funny, I don't think. He's just awful. Like, he's fitting in with this season's repeated depiction of the absolute underbelly of politics in all of its horrifying glory. And he is the perfect representation of that, like bringing to Selena the horrible problem of prison populations falling below 135%. Holy shit. And that also feels like a very real conversation happening in some person's office.
Oh, absolutely.
To the congressmen and senators' credit in the show, no one will take Selena's, and I feel like this is almost a bridge too far for Selena to be so in this guy's pocket.
I don't know. She's about as selfish as it gets at this point.
Yes.
She's getting progressively more self-centered.
Yes. I think this is as morally corrupt as she has ever been on the show. At least when she was president and trading stuff away, it was in pursuit of larger things that might have come off. Like, my rewatch is at a point where she's trying to get the family's first bill pushed, and that is just being nickeled and dimed and dying a death of a thousand cuts.
Right.
To the point where she eventually conspires to have, or her staff at least, I don't remember how involved she is in it, but everyone's conspiring to get it deep-sixed without it falling back on her. Like, this is her legislation, but she needs it to fail because it's become so corrupted. But at least she started from something good. She's only starting now. Like, her only goal is to get the library. And the only reason she wants the library is so history will remember her in a favorable light, like through the lens that she wants history to view her through. So there's no forgiving her for calling all of these congresspeople and trying to get them to overturn a bill that would strip private prisons of their preferences. And the only person who will take the call is Jonah, and which I think is good and fine and right. Despite their initial meeting going horribly, Tans likes Jonah's spinelessness and how easy he will be to control. And this combines with Jonah's publicized rant against daylight savings time,
which was great.
Daylight saving.
So
yeah, daylight saving.
Daylight saving time. Excuse me. Sorry, Kent. And this allows Jonah to give a fiery speech on the House floor about what a waste daylight savings time is, and also we should keep private prisons open. So this is the kind of after credits punch to the gut that you have been missing, Brian. So you were absolutely right earlier in the Silicon VP / VPC series about how important those tags are.
What tags are you talking about?
End credit tags.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm almost tempted. I wish someone had, like, something online where I could watch the last 5 minutes of every episode.
There you go.
Up until now.
That's a new project for us at the Media Movie Club.
That's a lot of editing.
Yeah. The last thing is there's like a repeated comedic theme of characters reacting oddly to health news. Like Selena, when she's being examined by a doctor after her heart attack, she doesn't know it's a heart attack. She's sure it's menopause, but when the doctor tells her that she's had this event, she is overjoyed about not going through menopause, and instead her heart is, you know, having serious problems. And then conversely, Gary is excited about Selena potentially going through menopause because it'll free up space in his bag. He doesn't have to carry tampons anymore. Catherine finds herself laughing at the news of Selena's heart attack. And finally, Dan is thrilled to have sperm with bad motility because it means he can potentially get some refunds on some abortions that he's paid for.
This is the Dan that I don't really know that he's that awful. He's not going to be so awful this season.
I don't think – I mean, what's awful about paying for abortions under false pretenses? I don't think that's right. That's just putting $1,000 in someone's hand. He should get that money back.
It's a little distasteful. A
lot of solid abortion jokes in this episode. Yeah. If last season of BoJack Horseman has taught me anything, it's that I love a good abortion joke. Yes. And there were a couple of them in this
episode. Everyone listening right now, the dozens of listeners, are all very uncomfortable. Just an FYI.
That's fine.
We don't even have a sponsor tonight because we're bringing up abortion.
It's that radioactive. And yeah, how you make it less radioactive is laugh about it.
One of the podcasts I listened to, they did it's Science Versus, and no one would sponsor it because they're doing Science Versus Abortion.
All right, it's fucking 2017.
We had the same discussion in Deadwood too.
Did we talk about old brat pow pows on Deadwood?
I was just getting ready to use that phrase. This is the first time I had heard that phrase.
Or the abobos, as they're referred to in You're the Worst. I like brat pow pows better, but abobos is okay.
I don't know. You're the worst.
Do they really cost $1,000?
I don't know how much they cost. I have no sense of it.
Okay.
Maybe.
I thought they just gave them away on the street corner.
Several hundred, perhaps?
I don't know how. I'm a Republican, so I don't really understand biology.
Sure.
Anyway.
In fake America, there are just people with like rubber bands and abortive fashions on the street corners, just shooting them out into crowds. And sometimes they land in women's mouths. And a soul expires.
Liberal part of Georgia, we live in Atlanta, and that is what happens. And I had to protect my pregnant wife from abortions.
Yes, abortifashioned.
Abortifashioned.
Yes, you're walking down.
You're there.
You're walking down. Yeah, you're walking down Moreland, checking out sites and little Five Points where today the Rickmobile was for all you Rick and Morty fans. They were just hawking merch. It didn't seem worth checking out. But there were a lot of people there. People like Rick and Morty.
Anyway. Was it free? Or what did they?
Oh, no. You had to pay for it. Oh. It was just a food truck with merch, basically.
You could walk up to the truck. Right? It's a free country, Brian.
Yes.
For now.
Thanks for now.
Blair's walking down the
street. Every road is told.
An abortion doctor, an OBGYN, or an abortionist, as my mom would refer to them.
Yeah.
It's just, he's shooting RU486 with a rubber band out in the crowds, and Shane, slow motion, slaps it away from right before it goes in Blair's mouth. Here we are today.
If I wasn't Shane's an average sleeping. Athlete. Yeah, if I wasn't an average athlete, I wouldn't have a child. Like, I was like slightly below. Oh, my God.
It was a pretty impressive SWAT of an abortion bill.
Yeah.
Can I tell a tangent on RU486?
Please.
When I was a sophomore in high school in social studies class.
Go on.
Yes.
Yeah. Listen, we could write papers for bonus, and the teacher assigned us a topic based on like current events or other stuff. And for some reason, I got assigned RU486.
Sounds pretty hot. For mid-90s.
So this is like year 2000 in southern Putnam County, Indiana, very rural. And it took me like until like 3 or 4 years ago when I thought of that for some reason to realize that that teacher was like super liberal. And I had no idea all through high school.
I mean, I feel like that's something like if I had good religion classes at my Catholic high school, we could just as well have been assigned a project about RU486, but it would have come with the disclaimer that this better be negative.
Right. No, this was just like...
This better be about made-up side effects.
Right. No, this is just like write a 3-page paper talking about it and, you know, pros and cons and things. So this
pros and cons.
Interesting. I don't know what... Compare and contrast, good, whatever.
That goes back to what we're talking
about. Well, I mean, pro and con, sure. Like a thinking person could make that list. But again, I was thinking about being assigned that in my social justice religion class and be like, pro, if it's not empty, you get an F.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hooray, public school.
So, real world similarities this week. I appreciated some good jabs at President Taft, that fat piece of shit who did get buried in a piano case, stuck in a bathtub. Poor guy. That's his great claim to historical fame. He was president during an uneventful time in history, apparently. To 1912.
Did we all watch something, or did it come up in something where he had a special seat in a theater that was extra wide built for him?
I would totally believe that. He was a giant.
At his university, Yale or Harvard or something. I don't know where that was from, but it definitely happened.
I mean, can we think of any other famous historical fat people? I feel like Louis XIV, perhaps, but he may not have been fat, actually. He had like a giant tapeworm inside of him.
I wonder how fat Taft actually is.
I mean, now he would just be a fat person. He would be a monstrous fat person, I'm sure he was when people were saying bully and so on and so forth in the early 1900s.
He's probably just like a regular person who's eating real Gilbert Grape. He's lady's fat.
I think he's technically obese, but he's tall.
God, yes, he's obese.
So he is, I want to say like 260, 270, perhaps. I don't know, I've seen him in those polos on the golf course.
Yeah.
It's Taft-esque.
You think he's that big?
No, I mean, I would imagine Taft was shorter. It was the 1900s. They say, 1900s.
Yeah. It's un-American to speak about my president like that, John.
Taft, by age 48, he was 320 pounds.
Okay, that's heavier than I thought.
6 feet tall.
Okay, yeah. Wow, he was a large man.
Yeah, that's basically an NFL offensive lineman.
Okay, yeah. So, that's Taft.
Oh, now some other thing says 340.
Okay.
I mean... Freshman 15 applies to the presidency, like it does college.
A lot of mutton.
A lot of potted meat.
Yeah,
and it being the Upton Sinclair era, a lot of human remains probably as well.
Yeah.
It just finds its way into meatpacking plants. What's to be done?
Work comp laws weren't very good back then.
Sure. Triangle shirtwaist fire and all of that. History.
Yeah. And that mention of work comp is sponsored by Benzene Law Group.
Unafraid of the old abobo.
Get you the justice you need and the money you deserve. And we have no opinion on abortion.
Further real world similarities.
Hope you have a job tomorrow. Yeah,
if Nick actually listens, the only time Nick has ever listened to this podcast was I had my rental car and the Bluetooth would turn my phone on, my podcast, whatever was I was last listening to, and I got caught listening to my own podcast in the car with my paralegal.
And you were on it.
And I was
on episode
it.
You were not.
Yes,
on
it was the episode I was on. Yeah, that's embarrassing.
Further real world similarities is the pre-written bill that Tans hands to Jonah that contains all of the private prison stuff and probably some sop to his concern about daylight saving time. Those kind of things happen all the time, copied and pasted and funneled through the conservative group ALEC. But we already talked about corporations as people and that Democrats have to also jump on that train lest they be left behind in the fundraising game. So there is a liberal equivalent, a Democratic equivalent called ALICE initially as a play on ALEC. But now they call it SEX, capital S, lowercase I, capital X. I don't know what either of any of those acronyms stand for. But it's a very true part of politics that congressmen just have bills that are pre-written, handed to them by super PACs that are funded by who the fuck knows. Presumably.
Oh, it's.
Interests that are behind that legislation that would benefit that legislation.
Even prior to super PACs, when I worked in Atlanta, I was friends with one of our lobbyists, and she would talk about how she was working on writing bills that day for the Georgia legislature. So,
okay,
it's much more out in the open than you would believe when you're working in industry, in a regulated industry. So, like this show, we've talked about Veep getting more. She's getting more selfish, and she's getting meaner to everyone. She's mean to her doctor, worse to the staff than ever. She's even mad at her daughter for bringing her flowers. She makes fun of the flowers. I don't know what bodega flowers means, but it seemed derogatory. Flowers at the grocery store.
Instead of flowers, have the food delivered to the wrong house, have John Kissel try it out.
Oh, yes. I'm sure everyone is eagerly
awaiting the
result of
that.
Yeah. The sauteed vegetables were fine. We continued to eat them over the course of the next week. The cheesecake was fine. The chicken fingers were just shitty chicken fingers. I feel like no matter what step of the process you were eating those at, they were going to be terrible. I don't know how Jeff felt about them.
I thought they were fine. I like chicken.
We just got a bad one, maybe. But the direction said heat them up in the oven, and I heated them up in the microwave.
Yeah.
Oh, you can't microwave chicken fingers. Were they breaded?
Yes, yeah. They were.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, so that's my mistake.
That is your,
No comment on the chicken fingers. Retracted. The shrimp scampi made my head feel really weird. So that was not consumed by anyone else in the house.
That's great.
It's a shame because it was really good. It was very good. Strongly recommend instead of flowers as an organization.
Yeah, we got the same meal the next week. Delivered on time, and it was really good.
Thanks for the interruption. I forgot about that.
Everyone,
that was good.
Fine.
I appreciate
I'm fine,
it.
Fine, everyone.
Yeah, good. You're no longer hallucinating about shrimp scampi.
We still didn't. Had you died, we still didn't have a podcast. But we wouldn't have an outline to go off of.
Sure.
Just
I mean, we've got a long record. We've got a long record of me talking. I feel like you could have just pasted a reasonable conversation together using words from previous podcasts.
Yeah, that's right. Like Sopranos did with Tony's mom.
Sure. Yeah. I'm thinking of like classic Simpsons episodes as well. That's just for me, though, apparently.
Yeah, that's perfect. It's probably a more popular joke than the ambulators joke, but if you listen to this, there's a chance.
We haven't done a Simpsons recap. I mean, I feel like the ambulators
that would be
all the time in Deadwood.
Yeah.
It's great.
Anyway,
to be a part of
Selena's awfulness is wearing on me. Like I'm not looking forward to watching next week because she's crossed a line, like the line that George Costanza towed perfectly. Selena has crossed over and stomped on that line. It's worn me down. I'm just tired of it.
Yes, her relationship with Gary used to kind of be a saving grace. Like I think. Six seasons in, one of the best moments of the show remains when Selena first found out that President Hughes was resigning and she was going to be president. She just happened to be in the bathroom with Gary at the time, and they just sat there laughing and crying, and Gary's nose started bleeding, and like that was like a true moment between the two of them, and also had the benefit of being utterly hilarious. And the further she gets away from like treating him as a person that she needs, which she still very much does at this point in the show, but he is he functions as like an electronic assistant almost, who just knows the password to her phone instead of like an actual person.
Right.
And I would agree as well that with the tan stuff, as I said, like she is getting really deep into straight up corruption for, and not just like corruption for like pharmaceutical companies, which is bad, but pharmaceutical companies do some good as well. Private prisons do no good for anyone except their shareholders. So it's a level of corruption that is unforgivable. And I feel like we're coming up toward a big, we have to be coming up to a big rapprochement, comeuppance, whatever, where she has some like moment of realization of how far she has gotten from a person worth following. There was a period of time where she was a senator where she got people to vote for her. Like she has to connect back to that person somehow.
Right.
And at this point, she's never been further away from it. And it is getting grosser to watch the show, as funny as it often is. So favorite moments. I had to pause it when this line was spoken because I was laughing so hard.
It was really good.
I love when shows make fun of morning TV shows or evening news. Again, we're going to mention The Simpsons here and Ken Brockman. Those jokes write themselves because morning TV and evening news are fundamentally ridiculous so often. Dan, on his show with, I don't remember her name, whatever, but she is leading into a new segment, and she starts by saying, reading, could it be bad for your child's self-esteem?
I think she follows it up with like perfect. One housewife says something. That was good.
It was perfect.
That's just like the kind of questions they ask to try, not that they being just all morning news types everywhere, asked to get the viewer to stick around.
rhetorical questions
that have such obvious answers that why are you even talking about this in the first place?
That's what you would see from like the Upshots Twitter account. It's just clickbait at this point. It's just hilariously awful. I'm glad somebody's making fun of it.
Don't show me a commercial 5 hours before the news airs about this could kill you. What kind of network, if it really could kill you, would withhold that information from someone and then wait 5 hours to deliver it to you if it was so fucking important? TV news is ridiculous.
This is sort of related. The news around here said a 4-year-old walked out of her school unnoticed.
You won't believe what happened next.
See what the superintendent has to say about it. And I saw that and I thought, God, what clickbait. It was in the school district I work. And like I read what he wrote about it. Like he sent an all staff email and it was like very well, it was handled as well as it can. And I was just like, oh, that's not exciting at all. That's exactly what we were supposed to do. So
I feel like way back when we were talking about Nightcrawler in the movie group that I might have docked that movie because it was so on the nose about his critiques of local news. But I mean, it was true. It was all true. It's a ridiculous endeavor. And yes, Brian, anytime it can be poked fun at, I welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Despite my disappointment in the show, I felt like there were a few really good lines here. Catherine's girlfriend, wife, I don't know. They're married now, right?
I have no idea. I made that note. I own notes. I don't know if they're married or not.
Anyway, she refers to Catherine's uterus as porcelain. That was on, but funny. This is gross, but funny. When Dan is meeting with Catherine and her lover and the doctor, and tells the doctor that he's just the cream filling in this gay Claire.
And no one pauses even. Like the doctor has heard Stranger Things clearly, because she just moves along. Right.
There was a great baseball reference for you, John. Someone refers to something coming out of left field, and someone says, that was my position in Little League, and Richard responds with, I was a pitcher's helper. I love Richard.
He's great. He's having a great season. Like, he's in the ascendant. Selena loves him.
Jonah calls Richard, like, Richard something or other, making, I don't know, being mean to him. And Richard's only
if I can interject, he goes on a long preamble, like, is this the guy too good to hang out with the baddest-ass congressman that ever congressmaned, or something to that effect?
Richard responds with, no, it's Richard Split.
That's pretty great.
It's a great character. Did you ever check out splitnet.net?
I did, but I don't remember what was there. Nothing memorable.
It was very much in the voice of Richard Split.
Same quality website as the Space Jam website?
Give or take. Okay. I mean, apples and oranges. There's like peak website versus website.
Okay.
So it's hard to compare. Shane, any specific funny moment you want to call out in this episode of
Kent's just my favorite character. The daylight saving time is just so good.
We've got a lot of love for Kent on Silicon VP / VPC.
I think he's the best character. He's just funniest. It's just great.
So that's the end. That'll bring us to the end of this episode. We got to decide who won the week. I think Veep won the week. The plot, curly Q nature of the Silicon Valley plot, like reverting back to its beginning, really devalued it in my memory as the days have gone by. So as can't say it enough, as gross as Veep is getting, it's still, I think, emerged the victor as far as good TV goes in this comedy block.
I'm going to go with Silicon Valley.
Oh, boy.
So this is, I guess, set Brian up for this is going to be tense. But before you go, I just want to say that any episode that of Veep that's going to focus so much on Gary, I'm probably not going to be so high on. I just don't
care. He's just in a sad state. I think you missed. The earlier seasons where he was just like there, like in the whole second season when he's with his girlfriend.
Oh, he's great.
Is overly familiar with Selena. It's hilarious. Like she's opening a Parmesan cheese store. And anyways.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not that he's a big character. We don't need to spend so much time with him. It's just ridiculous. And it's too.
Yeah. I mean, like he's.
It's too absurd that it's distracting. Like Kent is absurd, but it's not like distracting. It's just offhand comments. It's very dry humor. Gary's just absurd.
He's gotten too needy. And without having seen... he's always been needy. But without having it be in a more reciprocal place like it was earlier in the series, then yeah, I can imagine him being pretty insufferable. Even stoned on morphine. And I get it. Yeah, that's fine. Brian, break the tie?
I'm going... to say that the Bernie Madoff preview won the week. That looked fantastic. That was the most interesting 2 minutes of my hour of sitting down to watch HBO the Bernie Madoff preview.
So we've got a tie, basically.
Yeah, tie for bad.
It's still 1-1.
Two good episodes.
It's still 1-1 in the race.
Wow.
Just, and now we've got an odd number going forward.
Ooh.
So we will 100% have a winner. We don't have any ties or that nonsense once we decide who won the season.
Silicon Valley, like Brian and I's fantasy baseball team this year, is going to need to come back. We're 0-5.
I'm going to retract my name from that as I was not consulted this year.
I did all the drafting.
Only, what, like 10 months to go in the baseball season? You have plenty of time to make
Zing!
That will bring us to the end of this week's episode of the Mini Movie
Cast. What have you been watching?
God fucking damn it!
Yes. What have I been watching? Nothing. Oh, I've been trying to watch The Wire. I just can't. Can't get into it.
Get through six episodes. If you don't like it,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's quite a commitment. Get through 6 hours of this, and then if you don't.
I tend to hate that kind of advice.
But it's accurate in this show.
It is.
Like, just if you don't like it after that, just ditch it immediately.
I feel like I'm watching NYPD Blue all over again with less butts.
A David Milch series, by the way. For a period of time, it lives in a world of police procedurals, and then it breaks out of them. But you're not wrong that a time investment is required before it breaks out of that trope.
Yeah, like
if it was just that, then yeah, I would 100% agree it's not worth watching.
People say that, but
it is more than that.
And like stuff like Sons of Anarchy and whatnot, and they're full of shit. Those are just bad shows. It actually gets better.
Mm.
And you have a podcast to help you follow along.
That's right.
Well, if I still am trying to get to three, so I can listen to the first podcast, but I'm just.
I think that'll be what gets you over going on. Is our excellent work in the first episode of our Wire recap. Stand by it. It was great pod. Shane, what have you been watching this week?
Thanks for asking, John. I appreciate that. I watched Suicide Squad, and I regret every minute.
I started that.
It's the best way to describe it is it's a movie version of a 1996 pop song. It's just a straight C. There's not a lot of depth to it. There's some good catchy parts, but that's it. I mean, the honest trailer that they did, we should watch again, is fantastic.
Really focusing Please on watch. Some silly dancing, the, which has which the, exists the, in a the superhero bad movie.
Character is so Brian. When you get to the end of that movie, which it's fine, watch the end. Like it's totally mindless. Like. Look at your fantasy team.
I love the character introduction. I think is interesting so far.
How far are you into it?
The Joker just shot the guy who came to meet with him.
He just found out
that the Joker's.
So eventually, their character introduction is just a guy going, "This is Sidewinder. He climbs buildings." And the guy doesn't even get a speaking part. It's ridiculous. I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a few characters where he just explains what they are. This is Katana. Don't get on her bad side. When she kills someone, her sword eats your soul.
What?
It's ridiculous. It's a line in the movie.
I don't understand how this movie can exist in the same. I mean, I guess it doesn't. It's a different Joker, obviously, but...
Oh, he's actually the worst part of it. He's so bad.
Like the Dark Knight movies where people compared it to Heat. Like, it doesn't exist in a fantasy world, but guys are shooting fire and are crocodile men in this version.
Yeah, and it could have been it's fine, fucking silly. But it was so bad. Jared Leto was so bad. It's so bad. But it's pretty much a perfectly mindless C-minus movie that you should be watched with people while drinking.
We might just revisit that in the Munich Movie Club on our private Facebook page. Sorry, fans. I don't know. There's no reason we can't open that up to the public.
That's kind of fun.
It just might.
All right.
Can I get another one to add?
Oh, I got one
go
more.
Go ahead, Shane. No, you go ahead.
AV Club is doing covers for the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 soundtrack. They're awful. Don't listen to them.
Brian, you had another one?
Yeah, have you both seen Passengers?
MMC member Ashley raves about it.
All right, well then, I watched this YouTube video about the script of Passengers that I'll save for another time.
She convinced me to give it a shot. I have a sense of how inherently gross the plot is.
That's exactly what this... You watch it, and then I'll send you this video, and then when we pod afterwards, we'll talk about the video.
Fantastic. That's it for this week. Check us out on the internet at mediacommovie.club. We are, at this moment right now, reviewing In the Bedroom, but we'll have our next group movie, An Unmarried Woman, posted tomorrow or Saturday, most likely. We got a flurry of activity on
Where is Unmarried Woman streaming?
Fucking no idea. Amazon, perhaps? I'm just guessing, though. I mean, it can only be like three or four things.
We're fans.
Got like a 25% shot at getting that one
In
right.
In the Bedroom is on Amazon, guys.
Yes. I like it. I think it falls apart at the end. Shane was the most positive of us, and Brian was the most negative. So an array of opinion about In the Bedroom. Flurry of Activity on our Side Pieces tab. I just posted a review of the most recent remake of Ghostbusters, D+. It's always fun to write a shitty review. It's also fun to write a glowing review, which I did for Manchester by the Sea. And I wrote a review closer to Manchester by the Sea for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. If you would like to read my thoughts about that, check out our Side Pieces tab. Follow us on Facebook at Mutical Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter at Mutical Movical. And check us out on iTunes. You don't have to like our podcast necessarily. But
you just give us the review.
Yeah, 5 stars, and then write whatever you want about our podcast.
We will read your review.
We will 100% do that.
Even if it's shit.
It's totally possible that someone in the intervening period, since we last podcasted or mentioned our iTunes reviews, has written a review on iTunes. We're not going to read it right now because we don't have it up and we haven't checked. But we promise in the future, from this moment, that we will check and be ready to go. We'll be back next week to talk about the next episodes of Silicon Valley and Veep. I'll talk to you then, Ryan and Shane.
Thanks, John.
See ya.
Have a good night.